This is Democracy Now!
We are profoundly shocked at the impact on civilians of the Israeli forces operation in Al-Nusrat at the weekend to secure the release of four hostages. Hundreds of Palestinians, many of them civilians, were reportedly killed and injured.
A pair of new UN reports has accused Israel, as well as Hamas, of committing war crimes in Gaza. This comes as pressures growing on both sides to back the ceasefire and hostage deal endorsed by the UN Security Council. We'll get the latest. Then a jury in Delaware has convicted President Biden's son Hunter of all three felonies in a federal gun trial for buying a gun at a time when he was using illegal drugs.
No one in this country is above the law. Everyone must be accountable for their actions, even this defendant.
And in a historic verdict, a federal jury in Florida has ordered Chiquita to pay over $38 million in damages to the families of eight Colombian men killed by paramilitary death squads funded by the banana giant. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Hamas and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad have submitted a formal response to a United Nations ceasefire proposal for the Gaza Strip. A Hamas spokesperson said the group's priority is to bring a complete stop to Israel's assault on Gaza. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has yet to respond publicly to the U.S.-backed ceasefire resolution, which was approved by the U.N. General Assembly Monday. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said Tuesday Netanyahu had, quote, reaffirmed his commitment to the proposal, unquote. This comes as Israel continues its unrelenting assault on the Gaza Strip. Among the latest attacks was an airstrike on a home in Gaza City's Zeitoun neighborhood earlier today that killed at least six people. In Jordan, world leaders and top aid officials gathered Tuesday for an emergency humanitarian summit on Gaza. They were joined by U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
Excellencies, the horror must stop. It's high time for a ceasefire, along with the unconditional release of hostages. I welcome the peace initiative recently outlined by President Biden and urge all parties to seize this opportunity and come to an agreement.
A new report by a UN independent human rights body finds both Israel and Palestinian armed groups have committed war crimes since Hamas's surprise attack on October 7th. The damning UN report accuses Israel of using starvation as a method of warfare, forcible transfer, and intentionally directing attacks against civilians. It calls on Israeli leaders to immediately end attacks, resulting in the killing and maiming of civilians in Gaza. End the siege, implement a ceasefire, and to pay reparations. The report also calls for the immediate and unconditional release of all hostages held by Hamas. On Tuesday, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin congratulated Israel's military chief over Saturday's raid on Nusayrat refugee camp, which freed four Israeli hostages. His call to Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant came as the United Nations top human rights office said Israel likely committed war crimes during the operation, which killed at least 274 Palestinian. 54 children were among the dead. Nearly 700 others were wounded. Jeremy Lawrence, spokesperson for the Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, said Israel's actions had left human rights workers deeply shocked.
Hundreds of Palestinians, many of them civilians, were reportedly killed and injured. The manner in which the raid was conducted in such a densely populated area seriously calls into question whether the principles of distinction, proportionality, and precaution, as set out under the laws of war, were respected by the Israeli forces.
Israel's military says it killed a senior commander of Hezbollah during an assault on southern Lebanon Tuesday. Talib Abdallah is among the most senior Hezbollah officials killed since cross-border fighting between Israel and Hezbollah escalated 8 months ago. Meanwhile, in the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces killed six Palestinians during a military raid on the town of Kafr Dan. Among those killed was the brother of a 12-year-old child who was killed by Israeli forces in Jenin 2 years ago. In Washington, D.C., peace activists with Code Pink disrupted a public address Tuesday by National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan. He was speaking at the American Jewish Committee's Global Forum in Washington, D.C.
Jake, thank you for being here with us today. We know...
Jake Sullivan, you are a war criminal. 15,000 people, 15,000 kids dead is not self-defense. Jake Sullivan, you are a war criminal.
Code Pink activists Olivia DiNucci and Medea Benjamin were quickly removed from the venue. Their protests came a day after officers with the Federal Protective Service fired a salvo of pepper ball rounds to clear demonstrators who'd erected a tent encampment outside a San Francisco federal building to protest U.S. support for Israel's assault on Gaza. Elsewhere yesterday, President Joe Biden was interrupted by a protester who accused him of being complicit in genocide.
The main reason I'm here is to say, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart. No.
President Biden was speaking at a Washington, D.C. conference hosted by Everytown for Gun Safety. As the protester was led away, the crowd chanted four more years.
Folks, it's okay. Look, they care. Innocent children have been lost. They make a full point.
The protest during President Biden's remarks on gun violence came just hours after a jury in Wilmington, Delaware, found his son, Hunter Biden, guilty of three felony charges for illegally purchasing a gun at a time when he was using drugs. Hunter Biden becomes the first child of a sitting U.S. president to be found guilty of a crime. Special Counsel David Weiss spoke after the verdict.
This case was about the illegal choices defendant made while in the throes of addiction. His choice to lie on a government form when he bought a gun, and the choice to then possess that gun. It was these choices and the combination of guns and drugs that made his conduct dangerous. Second, no one in this country is above the law. Everyone must be accountable for their actions, even this defendant.
A date for a sentencing hearing has not been set. Hunter Biden faces up to 25 years in prison, though a strict sentence is unlikely and Biden could avoid jail entirely. In the Gulf of Aden, at least 49 people have drowned and 140 others are missing after a boat carrying African asylum seekers sank off the coast of Yemen. At least 6 children are among the dead. The refugees had been fleeing violence, poverty, and the impacts of climate change in the Horn of Africa. The UN's International Organization for Migration reports nearly 100,000 asylum seekers arrived in Yemen last year, many of them bound for wealthier nations. That's more than triple the number who made the perilous crossing just 2 years prior. Malawi's vice president and 9 members of his entourage have been confirmed dead after their plane crashed in a mountainous region of the southern African nation. Saulos Chilima had served as Malawi's vice president since 2020, was expected to challenge incumbent president Lazarus Chakwera in elections scheduled for next year. The Biden administration's lifted a ban on arms shipments to the Ukrainian military unit known as the Azov Brigade, a former militia with ties to far-right hate groups. The State Department said Tuesday a thorough review turned up no evidence the brigade's members have committed human rights abuses. The Azov Brigade was founded in 2014 by a self-avowed neo-Nazi and white supremacist. Meanwhile, delegates from 90 nations are set to gather in Switzerland this weekend for a Ukraine peace summit, though Russia and key nations, including China, will not be participating. Swiss President Viola Amherd on Monday outlined the summit's goals.
We want to discuss ways for a comprehensive, just, and lasting peace in Ukraine based on international law and the UN Charter. We want to develop a common understanding for a possible framework to reach this goal. And we want to decide on a schedule together, how both parties can be tied into a future peace process.
The pharmaceutical giant Johnson & Johnson has agreed to pay $700 million to settle lawsuits brought by more than 40 state attorneys general over its asbestos-laced talcum powder, which has been linked to cancer. As part of the settlement, J&J will permanently end the production, sale and marketing of all products containing talcum powder. In 2018, a Reuters investigation found the pharmaceutical giant knew as early as 1971 that some of its talcum powder contained dangerous levels of asbestos, but covered up its findings about the deadly carcinogen. And a federal judge in Tallahassee has struck down Florida's ban on gender-affirming care for minors, ruling the law U.S. District Judge Robert Hinkle also struck down a provision that erects barriers to adults seeking transition care. In a 105-page order handed down Tuesday, the judge writes, quote, "In time, discrimination against transgender individuals will diminish, just as racism and misogyny have diminished." To paraphrase a civil rights advocate from an earlier time, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice, he wrote. The legislation was signed by Republican Governor Ron DeSantis last year. DeSantis has promised to appeal the ruling. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
An independent United Nations panel has concluded Israel and Hamas have committed war crimes since October 7th. In a new report, the UN Commission of Inquiry outlined a number of war crimes committed by Israel, including using starvation as a method of warfare and intentionally directing attacks against civilians. Part of the report details how Israel has also committed crimes against humanity for its, quote, widespread or systematic attack directed against the civilian population in Gaza. The report goes on to accuse Israel of committing numerous crimes against humanity, including, quote, extermination, murder, gender persecution, targeting Palestinian men and boys, forcible transfer, and torture, unquote. The UN Commission accused Hamas of also committing numerous war crimes, including intentionally directing attacks against civilians, as well as torture and, quote, indiscriminately firing projectiles towards populated areas in Israel, unquote. The UN accused both sides of committing sexual violence. The United Nations top human rights office also accused Israel of committing war crimes on Saturday, when Israeli forces killed at least 274 Palestinians in the Nusairat refugee camp during an operation to free four Israeli hostages. This is Jeremy Lawrence, spokesperson for the Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights.
We are profoundly shocked at the impact on civilians of the Israeli forces operation in Nusairat at the weekend to secure the release of four hostages. Hundreds of Palestinians, many of them civilians, were reportedly killed and injured. The manner in which the raid was conducted in such a densely populated area seriously calls into question whether the principles of distinction, proportionality, and precaution, as set out under the laws of war, were respected by the Israeli forces.
The UN's top human rights office also accused Palestinian armed groups of committing war crimes for holding hostages in densely populated areas. This comes as Israel and Hamas are being urged to accept the three-phase ceasefire and hostage deal outlined by President Biden, endorsed by the UN Security Council. On Tuesday, Hamas submitted its response to mediators from Qatar. The U.S. claims Israel's already agreed to the plan, but numerous Israeli officials have publicly attacked the deal. Israel is continuing to bombard Gaza, where the official death toll is 37,100. But that's believed to be an undercount since thousands of bodies remain under the rubble. We're joined right now by Sarah Lee Whitson, executive director of Dawn, a group working to reform U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East. Sarah, welcome back to Democracy Now! Sarah Lee, start off by responding to this ceasefire deal and where you think it stands. This is the one proposed by President Biden almost 2 weeks ago, the first time the U.S. didn't veto a ceasefire deal at the U.N. Security Council, but actually sponsored it.
It's a welcome proposal, if only 8 months and 40,000 dead Palestinians too late. Absolutely nothing of value has been achieved in this 8 months of carnage in Gaza. The Biden administration is basically trying to pressure Israel into accepting a ceasefire proposal by pretending it's an Israeli ceasefire proposal. While Hamas has accepted this, Israel has not yet accepted this ceasefire proposal, and in fact has communicated its unwillingness to abide by a ceasefire by continuing its heinous military incursions into Gaza.
The specific issue of whether Israel supported it or not, we've heard Secretary of State Blinken repeatedly say that they were just waiting for Hamas to respond. What do you sense is the situation here between the U.S. government and Israel on the ceasefire?
I think that the United States is trying to has been trying to push Israel to halt its operations, begged Israel for several months not to make an incursion into Rafah, all of which Israel has repeatedly ignored. I don't know whether the attack on the Nuseirat refugee camp that was part of a so-called rescue operation is something that the United States offered up its acquiescence and participation in exchange for Israel agreeing to a ceasefire. I imagine that the timing of this raid, certainly after the ceasefire proposal had been made, raises questions about that. But what we repeatedly hear from Israeli officials, not American officials purporting to speak on their behalf, is that they will not accept any ceasefire proposal until they achieve their mission of destroying all of Hamas.
And in relationship to this weekend raid, your perspective on reports that the United States provided intelligence and logistics support to the operation?
Well, it has been widely reported and confirmed by a number of U.S. government sources that the United States has been involved in the planning of this raid for several months and specifically provided intelligence as well as logistical support for this operation, which, of course, resulted in the murder of over 270 Palestinians. Entirely predictable when you randomly drop bombs all over a refugee camp that many, many people will die. Not only is it a grotesque, indiscriminate attack on civilians, Israelis deployed perfidy to carry it out. They dressed themselves up as civilians in a broad daylight attack. They used an aid truck that was videotaped approaching the area, as well as a civilian vehicle pretending to be refugees fleeing with a mattress on their car in order to trick Hamas forces and to allow the operation to go forward. There's also been a report by Hamas, which has not been verified, that the operation also resulted in Israel killing three other hostages, including a U.S. citizen, but we've not yet been able to confirm that.
I wanted to go to a clip of Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor. He was on CNN, and he was being questioned by Dana Bash about what took place in Nuseirat. He was being questioned while in Paris.
The United States has been providing support to Israel for several months in its efforts to help identify the locations of hostages in Gaza and to support efforts to try to secure their rescue or recovery. I'm not going to get into the specific operational or intelligence-related matters associated with that because we need to protect those. I can only just say that we have generally provided support to the IDF so that we can try to get all of the hostages home, including the American hostages who are still being held.
So I understand that intelligence, U.S. intelligence assisted, but will you say anything about U.S. personnel, U.S. weapons?
Well, the one thing I can say is that there were no U.S. forces, no U.S. boots on the ground involved in this operation. We did not participate militarily in this operation.
So if you can talk about that distinction that he's making, and then go on, Sarah Lee Whitson, to respond to these two UN reports.
Well, as I'm sure Jake Sullivan actually knows, military participation is not defined by boots on the ground. And his rebutting or refuting that there were American boots on the ground and therefore America was not militarily participating in the attack is absolutely false and wrong under international law. During the Yemen war, for example, and this is why Mr. Sullivan should know this, U.S. Lawyers advised the White House that American intelligence and logistical support for the Saudi war in Yemen would make the United States and makes the United States a party to that war. Similarly, American logistical and intelligence support for an active military operation means that the United States has actively participated in the conflict and is a party to the war. Why this is particularly bad, bad policymaking, is that not only does it make the United States liable and complicit for prosecution for war crimes, including the war crimes that took place in the attack on the refugee camp, but also opens up U.S. forces to reprisal attacks and counterattacks as a party to the conflict, as a legitimate military target. If the Biden administration has not sought a war powers resolution to enter the United States into such active participation in military operations, that is obviously a violation of our own Constitution, and yet another example of the Biden administration entangling us in military conflicts in the Middle East without congressional approval and ratification. With respect to the UN reports that have just been issued, they conclude what everybody else who is an expert in law and has observed, which is that the number one, the attack on Nusayrat refugee camp was itself and involved deliberate targeting of civilians as well as indiscriminate targeting of civilians. Sadly, this is just piling up on top of ceaseless, relentless war crimes and crimes against humanity that have been underway in Gaza for the past 8 months. And that is the conclusion that the Commission of Inquiry's report released today reveals. We now have mountains of UN reports, UN experts, the International Court of Justice, the International Criminal Court, shouting from the rafters that Israel is carrying out war crimes and crimes against humanity in Gaza. And yet, all of this is showing us, sadly, that Israel has no interest in international law, and the United States has no interest in demanding that Israel actually comply with international law, besides rhetorical flourishes added in statements to the press in the United States. The continued military support to Israel is really not just a savage attack on the Palestinian people. It is a savage attack on international law itself, and it will come to haunt and hurt America for decades to come.
And I wanted to ask you, Sarah Lee-Whitson, in a related issue in terms of the attacks on Gaza. On May 15th, your organization, Dawn, sent the State Department a dossier documenting how a group has been attempting to disrupt and prevent aid reaching the people of Palestine, the Palestinians in Gaza. Could you talk about that group and others that support it?
That's right. The Israeli group, I don't want to mangle the pronunciation, Sapi 9, is a organized group of settlers in the West Bank that have deliberately and repeatedly attacked humanitarian aid convoys headed to Gaza. This has been an organized effort coordinated on WhatsApp and other social media to announce exactly when and where the attacks would take place. We are urging the Biden administration to sanction this group, but not only to sanction this group, but to sanction the Israeli companies and NGOs, nonprofit organizations that have been actively fundraising to pay for these attacks on humanitarian aid convoys. I mean, it just boggles the mind that we have vigilante groups who are deliberately attacking food and medicine trucks meant for civilians. I think it raises a tremendous concern and question about the psychology of Israelis who would do such a thing. But more significantly, we want the Biden administration to exercise its sanctions that it has announced for violence in the West Bank, not only against these individuals, not only against this group. They are not just rogue lone wolf operators. operators. They are supported by an infrastructure and network of companies and businesses and nonprofit organizations that are funding their efforts. It's particularly appalling that an American NGO has been involved as well in a fundraising for these really disgusting attacks on humanitarian aid convoys. And we think that the IRS should closely examine whether these contributions violate their rules under the IRS as charitable donations.
We spoke to an Israeli human rights lawyer who tried to interrupt the settlers who were trying to stop the aid convoys. That group, Tzav 9, Tzav in Hebrew means command. Sarah Lee Whitson, we want to thank you so much for being with us, Executive Director of DAWN, an organization working to reform U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East. Next up, we turn to the conviction of President Biden's son, Hunter Biden, on all three felonies and that gun trial for buying a gun at a time when he was using illegal drugs. Stay with us. Tashiwada, featuring Julia Holter. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. A federal jury in Delaware has convicted Hunter Biden of all three felony charges for illegally purchasing a gun at a time when he was using drugs. Hunter Biden becomes the first child of a sitting U.S. president to be found guilty of a crime. Special Counsel David Weiss spoke after the verdict.
Ultimately, this case was not just about addiction, a disease that haunts families across the United States, including Hunter Biden's family. This case was about the illegal choices defendant made while in the throes of addiction, his choice to lie on a government form when he bought a gun, and the choice to then possess that gun. It was these choices and the combination of guns and drugs that made his conduct dangerous. Second, no one in this country is above the law. Everyone must be accountable for their actions, even this defendant. However, Hunter Biden should be no more accountable than any other citizen convicted of this same conduct. The prosecution has been and will continue to be committed to this principle.
Hunter Biden faces up to 25 years in prison, though that strictest sentence is highly unlikely, and Biden could avoid jail entirely. A date for the sentencing has not yet been sent, President Biden's vowed not to pardon his son. In a statement on Tuesday, President Biden said, "As I also said last week, I'll accept the outcome of this case and will continue to respect the judicial process as Hunter considers an appeal. Jill and I will always be there for Hunter and the rest of our family with our love and support. Nothing will ever change that," he said. We're joined now by Ben Schreckinger, a reporter for Politico. He's the author of The Bidens, Inside the First Family's 50-Year Rise to Power. Ben, if you could start off by responding to the verdict in this trial, what exactly it means, what Hunter Biden was charged with and convicted of.
Sure. My first response is that it's just not that surprising. This was a fairly straightforward case. Most criminal trials result in convictions. This was